feathers, and its tubby body was shaped like a spider's and covered with thick, soft fur, and it had hands and feet like a monkey's. It told the children, whose names were Cyril, Robert, Anthea and Jane, that it was a Psammead or a sand fairy. It was old, 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 and its birthday was almost at the very beginning of everything, and it had been buried in the sand for thousands of years. But it still kept its fairy likeness, and part of this fairy likeness was its power to give people whatever they wished for. You know fairies have always been able to do this. Cyril, Robert, Anthea and Jane now found their wishes come true, but somehow they never could think of just the right things to wish for, and their wishes sometimes turned out very oddly indeed. In the end, their unwise wishings landed them in what Robert called a very tight place indeed, and the Psammead consented to help them out of it, in return for their promise never, never to ask it to grant them any more wishes, and never to tell anyone about it, because it did not want to be bothered to give wishes to anyone, ever, any more. At the moment of parting, Jane said politely, "I wish we were going to see you again some day." And the Psammead, touched by this friendly thought, granted the wish. The book about all this is called Five Children and It, and it ends up in a most tiresome way by saying the children did see the Psammead again, but it was not in the sand pit, it was... But I must say no more. The reason that nothing more could be said was that I had not then been able to find out exactly when and where the children met the Psammead again. Of course I knew they would meet it, because it was a beast of its word, and when it said a thing would happen, that thing happened without fail. How different from the people who tell us about what weather is going to be on Thursday next, in London, the South Coast and Channel. The summer holidays, during which the Psammead had been found, and the wishes given, had been wonderful holidays in the country, and the children had the highest hopes of just such another holiday for the next summer. The winter holidays were beguiled by the wonderful happenings of the phoenix and the carpet, and the loss of these two treasures would have left the children in despair, but for the splendid hope of their next holiday in the country. The world, they felt, and indeed had some reason to feel, was full of wonderful things, and they were really the sort of people that wonderful things happened to. So they looked forward to the summer holiday, but when it came, everything was different. And very, very horrid. Father had to go out to Manchuria to telegraph news about the war to the tiresome paper he wrote for, the Daily Bellower, or something like that was its name. And Mother, poor dear Mother, was away in Madeira because she had been very ill, and the lamb, I mean the baby, was with her. And Aunt Emma, who was Mother's sister, had suddenly married Uncle Reginald, who was Father's brother, and they had gone to China, which is much too far off for you to expect to be asked to spend the holidays in, however fond your aunt and uncle may be of you. So the children were left in the care of the old nurse, who lived in Fitzroy Street near the British Museum, and though she was always very kind to them, and indeed spoiled them, far more than would be good for the most grown-up of us, the four children felt perfectly wretched. And when the cab had driven off with Father and all his boxes and guns and the sheepskin, with blankets and the aluminium mess kit inside it, the stoutest heart quailed, and the girls broke down altogether and sobbed into each other's arms, while the boys each looked out of one of the long gloomy windows of the parlour and tried to pretend that no boy would be such a muff as to cry. I hope you notice that they were not cowardly enough to cry until their father had gone. They knew he had quite enough to upset him without that, but when he was gone, everyone felt as if it had been trying not to cry all its life, and that it must cry now if it died for it. So they cried. Tea, with shrimps and watercress, cheered them a little. The watercress was arranged in a hedge round a fat glass salt cellar, a tasteful device they had never seen before. But it was not a cheerful meal. After tea, Anthea went up to the room that had been Father's, and when she saw how dreadfully he wasn't there, and remembered how every minute was taking him further and further from her, and nearer to the guns of the Russians, she cried a little more. Then she thought of Mother, ill and alone, and perhaps at that very moment wanting a little girl to put eau de cologne on her head and make her sudden cups of tea, and she cried more than ever. And then she remembered what Mother...